Let's run through the checklist and then I'll make sure it's going to be quiet.
All good.
Did you kill them or just throw them away?
No, I always recycle children.
Hello, I'm Michael.
I'm Radek.
And this is The Podcast,
a sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss book read and want to share with you,
as well as technology and productivity, which is what we do by day working on our app, Nosby.
Or whatever else comes to our minds.
Yeah, and today we want to follow up a little bit on our last episode where we discussed the book Peak.
That's right. So in short, we're trying to get to the bottom of what makes people good at what they do, how do people achieve expertise or just skill, and in general, what's the best approach to learning.
Yeah, and last episode, as I re-listened to it, I realized we haven't made enough explicitly the distinction, which the book makes perfectly, is the difference between knowledge and skills. The idea being that you have to develop your skill set, you have to develop skills in order to achieve greatness, in order to achieve, you know, top performance. Because just knowing how stuff works is not enough to actually doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's why I really like the examples in the book, which highlighted that people, you know, knew some of the things, but only by deliberate practice, by practicing deliberately, by practicing solo, by practicing on their own with a tutor, with a teacher, with the feedback loops, with everything that we mentioned in the last episode, they achieve greatness and they achieve the skill set. And the best part is that once you have the skill set, once you have the skills to do something, they last, you know, for long, you know, for a lifetime, actually. So what you can, so the idea being that you are becoming a better version of you once you actually acquire a new skill set.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I would say that the book made a three-way distinction. So first of all, there's a difference between kind of raw knowledge, which is the information, the data required for a skill, and actually practicing a skill. So that's the main point the book was trying to make, that deliberate practice, you know, the act of practicing is something that should have a dedicated time and a dedicated approach, because it's not the same as, you know, just sponging up information. But second of all, it's not the same as just doing something. Okay, so that's the second distinction. We talked about how skills don't just automatically develop, right? It doesn't matter if you have 20 years of experience at something. If the way you do your work, for example, doesn't lend itself to practice, like if it doesn't have a tight feedback loop through which you notice your mistakes and keep learning, you know, you might do something for a job for 30 years and don't improve. So it's different to do your work. It's a different thing to do deliberate practice. And it's a different thing to just, you know, acquire knowledge, but without putting it in a loop with practice.
Yeah, and because we've been asked and we've been told that, you know, it's great to discuss books and ideas in the books, but how do we implement these ideas? How do we really, you know, put them into practice? If all we do is just read a book and then, you know, give you this, you know, the nutshell in this podcast, and then we move on with our lives, well, there is a reason why we read so many books. We really want to improve, and we really want to be better at things. Mm-hmm. And just from this book, and as I mentioned last episode, this book has been very important to me. And in the next episode, which will discuss goals for next year for us, I will, you know, I will be getting back to these ideas most of the time, because they are the ideas from this book are the foundation for me for how I plan the goals, and it's totally different than I used to do. I mean, some like when I analyzed my past several times, I did it right, you know, by accident. But now I'm going to deliberately plan goals and plan the ways I'm going to achieve these goals, thanks to the ideas from this book. So in this episode, we want to give you a few examples anyway of how we put this into practice.
That's right. So this is important. Last week, we were trying to convey the ideas from the book. And re-listening to the episode, I realized that, as it usually is when we discuss ideas from books, we're missing context. It's very, very difficult to compress an 8-hour book into a 30 or 40 minute discussion. But what hopefully you listened to the last episode, but even if you haven't, this one will be useful, because we want to give you two or maybe more examples of how exactly we put the ideas from the book Peak, how we implemented deliberate practice in our lives.
Okay, so do you want to start with yours?
Yeah, I do. So my example is related to my work. So it's a programming example. I'll try to skip some of the technical parts, because that's, you know, the exact thing is not that important, unless you're a programmer, in which case, awesome. But I just want to give the, you know, one way in which deliberate practice can be applied for technical skills.
Okay.
So over the last few months, I've been learning this new skill, this thing called reactive functional programming, or RFP. It's something I've heard for the first time maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and I've wanted to learn it since, but I could never find time for it. Because it's not an easy skill. It's not just a simple tool. It's a programming paradigm. So essentially, it has to do with the way you write code. The part of the fundamental skill.
Wow.
But I wanted to learn it because it shows promise to enhance the quality of the stuff I produce, make it more maintainable. Less prone to bugs, easier to change, to implement, you know, very complex behaviors, stuff like that. So I wanted to learn RFP, and now I did. So I started right around the time after I finished the book Peak. So I wanted to do the learning of RFP with the deliberate practice approach. So generally, the way programmers learn new skills, the naive approach, is, you know, you watch a tutorial or a video, or just read through the README file for a library or something.
Yeah.
You make sure you understand the basic thing. You add it to your app, you start playing with it, start using it in practice. So kind of as you do your job, you keep using it, and with time you just get good at it. And if it's something really difficult, really complex, then maybe you'll start a demo project to play around with it for a day or two, and then you put it in your app and start playing with it.
Yeah, that's correct. That's how I learned programming myself.
Yeah, and that's good for trivial things, and most things in reality. But RFP is anything but trivial. So the advantage of this naive approach is you can quickly gauge if you want to continue learning something, because you can see it as applied to a real world project. But I already knew I wanted to relearn RFP no matter what, even if I didn't end up using it in the Nosby app, just because that's expands my horizons. So I wanted to build a deep understanding of it before I apply. So here's how I went about it, my deliberate practice approach. First of all, I went through the basic documentation and examples, as you usually do. I already had a good basic idea of RFP, so I could read the examples and understand them. But I just wanted to seed my mind with more examples, more ideas. Two, here is where programmers would usually just start applying it to a real-world project. But not me with this. That wouldn't be the deliberate practice approach. You know, instead of jumping onto the whole of RFP, I started mastering the building blocks one by one, really practicing them and not applying them, not yet. So in Rx Swift, which is the library I use for RFP, there are two fundamental pieces. They're called observable and observer. It doesn't matter what they do. Then there's two import operation, subscription, disposal. There are four subjects, and there's like 60 or 70 operators. And again, what I do, it doesn't matter. But the point is, instead of thinking of Rx Swift, of RFP, as just a single skill, a overall thing, I thought of it as 80 or so tiny skills. And that's the first basic distinction. In the deliberate practice approach, you focus on just a very small subset, a very precise part of the whole skill, and you improve on that. You iterate until you master it. So that's what I wanted to do. I could have just learned the bare basics enough so I could start applying it, even if not very well. But instead, I decided I want to master every single one important piece of Rx Swift before applying it to my code. So start from the bottom, build all the, you know, learn all the building blocks, and only then kind of see the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean that's really the key. I mean that, and it was highlighted in the book so much that mm-hmm. you know, focusing on the whole thing, as you said, that it's not productive. Where you should focus on small, you know, small Lego puzzles, and then build the Lego blocks from there, right?
That's right. And the way I was practicing those tiny, like, you know, one of those 80 sub skills is with this app called Swift Playgrounds. And here's the point of that. With the practice, it's really important to have a tight feedback loop, right? You don't just do stuff until you magically get better. You do something, you see how well you did, and you keep iterating with the feedback loop until the feedback loop tells you you've got it, okay? So to explain to non-programmers, generally with a language like Swift, you write a bunch of code, you compile it, and you run the app, and you see if it works, right?
Yeah.
In Swift Playgrounds, what you do is, you know, after every single line of code, you see on the right of it what it does. So like the evaluated value from that line. So the most basic example would be if you type top plus 2, it would just say, you know, 4 to the right of that expression, right? And so what I did with those building blocks was I would look at one operator or some other part of Rx Swift, you know, just look at the documentation for a few seconds until I felt like, okay, I got the basic idea. Then without looking at it, I would write code and see if it does exactly what I expect. And I would have instant feedback. You know, if I made an error, it wouldn't compile, or it would say something I didn't expect. And then I would see, okay, I'm not getting it. And then I would write more code, you know, test all of the possibilities. If I had doubts about something, you know, instead of looking at the docs to say how it says it should work, I would just write the code to verify what it does. And then I would see if it matches my expectations. And I would iterate on every single one of those operators and other building blocks until each one did in the playgrounds, you know, the instant feedback loop told me, yeah, you're getting it. I wrote something, I had an expectation of what it will, you know, the result it will produce, and I iterated until it did exactly what I expected.
I don't know if you also realized, but not only have you used deliberate practice in this example, but you also highlighted something which is really important for learning, like the retrieval process of what you learned. And the retrieval process works like this, that we learn when we make mistakes, when we, you know, when we have to, you know, get back the information that we acquired. So as you said, if you would just blindly copy something just from the docs or whatever, you wouldn't learn it really. But once you, you know, you saw that something wouldn't work, you started tweaking it, you got the information back. And this way, not only it was like a really deliberate practice session, but also this retrieval process helped you also learn more.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in the end, I wrote something like 3,000 lines of Swift in this playground. So a good amount. And that's just a step 2, okay? But that's exactly the point. I'm doing this deliberately. step three, I wrote down, you know, I compiled a list of all the 70 operators in RxSwift. And, you know, the numbers sounds intimidating, but most of them are pretty basic, pretty obvious. But the point is, I just looked at the code, wrote down the list so that there's just the names of those building blocks. And then without looking at the documentation or the compiler, just looking at this list, I went through every single one of them and made sure I have a good understanding of each one. So this has to do with exactly what you said, the how do you call it? The retrieval process?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it also has to do with another thing we've discussed and struggled to properly explain, the mental models. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
So here's how I did it. In reactive functional programming, there's something called the marble diagram. How it works is beside the point, but it's a notation. It is a way to represent observable subjects, like all of the building blocks that I would be interested in. You can draw them. You can visually describe them with a drawing, with a marble diagram, and that's really big. First of all, it means you can visualize all the pieces of RxSwift. So when I was going through the list to make sure I really remember each piece, I looked at the name, and then, you know, without a computer, just with a piece of paper, I would draw the marble diagram of all the cases for this operator. And if I had any doubts, it meant, okay, I have to go back to the step two and work on this little skill, because I haven't made it automatic. I haven't made it intuitive for me yet. And if it went great, it means, okay, I really got it. It doesn't just seem like I got it. You know, I'm not looking at a compiler, at any help, and I can still easily draw it out. The second thing that's important with the marble diagram is that it's really helpful in building mental models. Like, you know, mental models are these templates of ideas, these structured ways in which we understand information or procedures or abstract concepts. And that's going to happen no matter what. But it's very helpful if you have a way to do it explicitly. Like, if you can visualize an abstract concept, which happens a lot in programming, turns out, then that's going to really help. Because every time you think of the concept before it becomes truly automatic and intuitive, you go through the same mental processes to like see the abstract concept like in the eye of your mind. So being able to draw it out or visualize it in your mind is really useful in making sure you build really robust mental representations.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
But that was very technical. That was really, wow. But you nailed all the points. I mean, really breaking it down to these skills and then, you know, making this model and doing all this work. It's whenever we learn new things, we don't appreciate like all these details and all these subtleties that we have to learn to make the, and we don't, you know, we don't want to invest in these small things because they're not so, you know, exciting. You know, the exciting thing is to know the thing, right? Mm-hmm. And but really, they're all building blocks are here.
Right. So those are just the three steps, right? And there's a few more, but those I went over a bit more quickly. So four. Then I started stacking together the bricks, but still in the playground. Right? So I was still in the environment where I could iterate quickly. I imagined common scenarios as in a real app. I simulated them and made sure the code does exactly what I expected. Right? Then I tackled this thing called RxCoco, which is a companion tool to RxSwift, but with like very like useful, very concrete, practical purposes for iOS and Mac apps. So again, I went through the important pieces of it brick by brick, similarly they're using Playground if I could, good instant feedback, rinse, repeat. Then I started going through a repository of examples with RxSwift code. So I analyzed each example, which simulated like a piece of a real app, and made sure I understood immediately every piece of it. And if I was confused, I dug deeper until it was clear to me, right? And out of it came more things that I thought I knew, but didn't really. So I had to get back to the feedback loop and improve on those little pieces until I really got it.
So just let me stop right there. So normally, as you said, what a programmer would do, like I would go directly to examples very quickly without nailing the basics as you did.
Yeah.
And then I would try more or less to understand. And even if I didn't understand completely how the example worked, I would still, you know, take it as it is and, you know, like use it anyway and build upon it anyway, although I wouldn't understand everything. So your approach is really more, you know, meticulous because you first you got the basics right, and then when you didn't understand something, you would get back to get the basics right.
That's right. And you know, with the usual approach, that's fine for many things. It's simpler, it's faster, in many ways, but it's also like an investment that's often necessary, but you don't make. So you end up paying the cost anyway. You're just spreading it out in more time. But in the meantime, you'll do a lot of mistakes. You'll create a lot of bugs in your apps that stem from the fact that you didn't nail the basics. You haven't mastered the skill until you started applying it. And so for me, like with this skill, I really wanted to feel like I mastered the basics until I started, you know, mastering the practical usage of the thing. So only here, like at, you know, step 7, I started actually applying the skill and using the library with the Nosby app. So, and even then, like I did it quite deliberately. So I started converting code that did, you know, equivalent things to what I would do with Rx Swift, but in a different way. So that was pretty straightforward. Then I tackled new obvious places. Then I started messing with the, you know, architecture of the whole app, like how like really complex, difficult things connect, you know, redoing really important pieces, but also improving the app, not just the quality of the code in a real way. And along the way, even then, I discovered issues, holes in my understanding. And instead of doing what in most cases programmers would do, which is just patch up the immediate problem in front of you, but just, you know, ignore it. No, I would step back and make sure I understood the deep cause of the issue I've had until I really understood why this happened, why I've had this problem, and what's the right way to tackle it. Not just try to patch it up until it seems to work.
Yeah, that seems like a very comprehensive way to go about it. And I would like to highlight this idea that what you said here, just like about the long, you know, thinking about the long run, thinking about, you know, you make the investment in yourself by developing these skills, because you know that if it succeeds and if you like this way of, you know, programming, you will use it for years to come. So instead of, as you said, patching and going like taking shortcuts all the time, you know that it's worth getting back and really relearning these things, you know, improving your skills to be able to advance.
Yeah, and I see this kind of skill as promising in my field. Maybe not the exact version of it, but like many of these ideas, you can see in the field that they're really important, that a lot of new developments, new skills, new trends are related to it. And when you learn skills the way most people do, which is you learn enough until you feel like you're good enough. So for example, you started learning at the beginning when you were starting as a programmer, then you felt like, oh, I'm good enough, and then just keep practicing and sure, you know, accrue more knowledge and skill along the way just through practice, but shunning away from these really, you know, difficult new ways, like you know, serious skills, not something simple but something comprehensive like this. Then at some point, you look around and realize, oh, wow, the world has moved on and you're stuck in the past, right? And so just the meta skill of deliberate practice and being comfortable with really investing in something hard and something that's going to take time, and doing it right so that you really get it and not just scratch the surface, that's going to pay serious dividends over time.
Yeah, totally. Like, I have another example, which is totally the opposite. It's just a lot more simpler and a lot easier, but I think still has a lot to do with deliberate practice. So just as a totally different thing. My daughter just turned 8. I can't believe she's already 8. You know, I feel younger and she's 8 already. What happens is that she's learning right now to read. She already can read, but she's practicing reading. And the way she does it is she brings a book every day from school, and she reads the book to us, and then she goes back and brings another book another day. And it's great, and she's really good at this. The problem was that she would just read it very quickly. Like, let's say there was something like this. How do you do, somebody asked. And she would just read it like, how do you do, somebody asked. Like, without proper intonation, without proper, you know, mm-hmm. question mark, nothing like this. So I started, being a little bit bossy with her. Like, you shouldn't read like this, you should just do it differently. You mind the intonation, mind the question mark. Like, it wasn't really a good teacher there. But I was a concerned father, and I understood that she's not really progressing. But then after reading The Peak, I decided to take a different approach. Mm-hmm. So because the books she brings are very short, she reads them in 5 to 10 minutes, so they're really, really nice. So what we do now is she brings the book and she says, I'm gonna read the book to you, father. And I'm like, okay, read the book. And then she reads the book to me, and I'm just, listening, maybe correcting when she just misspells something. But other than that, I'm just listening to her read it. When she reads it, I'm like, way to go, I like it very much. But I would say you should, focus more on intonation, focus more on really reading it the way it should be read, to tell a story. Because there is a story here, you should tell the story. So let me read it for you, and then let's see if you can spot a difference, right? Mm. So I read it for her then, the problem is that she has a better accent than me, but, what can I do? I mean, she has a beautiful British accent, but that's beside the point. So I'm trying as much as I can to read it properly for her, but what I'm focused on is the intonation, the way I'm telling this story. Mm-hmm. But that's it. I'm just reading it to her. And then I give it to her again. And I'm like, okay, now can you try again and read it again? Thinking about the intonation, thinking about these things. Mm-hmm. And then she really surprises me, because then she really... like, she already knows the story, so it's easier for her to read it again, because, she already knows what she's going to read, and she heard the story twice already. And then she starts doing it deliberately. She starts, asking, making a question when there's a question, shouting, and even when there was a narrator, and narrator would just repeat something third time, she would change the tone, like, make it, boring and things. Like, she would introduce her own idea how to tell this story. So she wouldn't really read like I did, but based on my feedback, mm-hmm. she would read it differently. And for me, this is, I think, a great example of deliberate practice. We are doing the same thing, but with a feedback loop, with a, with a tutor of myself, and with her trying again, but in a different approach. And now this is what we do every day. I mean, every day she brings a book, she reads the book to me, I read it to her, and then she reads again, trying to improve. And, each time she's doing it better.
That's amazing. I wish I started really getting into a habit of, building this metal skill at 8. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, she is amazing. But I wouldn't come up with this idea if it wasn't for this book. This idea of, let's do it differently. Instead of shouting, trying, scolding her, let's try to do it differently. And she loved it, and she really, surprised me.
I guess there's one more thing I wanted to mention. We forgot to mention it last week, which is how this plays into our TGIF.
Yep.
So for those who haven't heard of it, we're linked to the idea of TGIF in the show notes. But essentially for, close to half a year now, right?
Yeah, half a year now. Yep.
Okay. We've been doing this policy at Nosby, where every Friday after doing your weekly review, you would just spend the rest of your day doing whatever, and hopefully, you know, we would suggest that maybe you should spend some of that time learning something new, something you've never had time for. So this was big for me, especially in the context of deliberate practice, because that created an environment in which I could finally tackle this new skill. So I mentioned I've wanted to learn it for 2 or 3 years, but just never had felt like I have time for it. An environment in which I would have enough time to really focus on a learning project like this that's going to take more than a weekend. And having this Friday or half a Friday allowed me to do this. And I spent many, many weeks on those Fridays learning RxSwift. And remember when I mentioned to you that I have a task in Nozbe where I have a checklist with like 80 or something
items.
Points?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was that. That was related to it.
All right.
Yeah. I had just a working checklist with like stuff I have to practice, I have to figure out. And as I was going through it, I just kept adding more and more and more. And I've almost finished.
Wow.
So yeah, it took a while, but that was also a conscious choice. I could have spent less time on it, but I really wanted to test out the hardcore version of deliberate practice. And I wanted to see like in how little time I can feel like I've maybe not mastered, but really learned a difficult skill. And normally something like that would take a lot longer because you wouldn't invest up front. You would amortize the costs through, you know, many months or years as you're using something. And I try to load it at the front to feel like when I've jumped to using it in practice, I already know what I'm doing.
Yeah, and again, this was really mentioned also in the book that we should be able to use our work time as a deliberate practice session, you know, or deliberate, you know, find deliberate practice sessions. And that's why I'm so happy that, you know, you mentioned TJF, the something that, you know, we came up with and that, you know, works for that, that gives you this window of opportunity that on Fridays, you're not doing the day-to-day stuff. So you can allow yourself, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours, 5 hours, depending, you know, how much you have after your weekly review, but you can have this time. You know, you can spend it the way you want it, and as you said, work. You know, learn something that you've always wanted to learn, and never got to it. And we have a few other examples in our company of people who manage that, who manage mm-hmm. to spend Fridays like that. And I think it's the, you know, the best way.
Yeah, and there's lots of examples, and you know, you can apply parts of this approach. You can apply it more stringently or less so. Just the bits and pieces are useful. Like, for example, it's sometimes hard to find a dedicated space for something, but if you can create some sort of a feedback loop or tighten it, or if, you know, you can tackle another part of this skill, which is, I think that's also related to deep work, I would say. At least it felt like this to me, that it's very difficult to practice deliberately, like really, really well, when you are not in this deep flow, when you're constantly distracted, that's going to be not just shallow work but shallow learning as well.
Yeah, totally. And it's good that we have the time. And you know, I like in the next episode, I really want to focus on the goal setting and how this ties into this, because like we just had a webinar at Nozbe about goal setting, and I had this whole thing prepared how I'm gonna, you know, go about it, but then this book totally changed the way I approached it. You know, I changed the presentation almost at the last minute because I really understood, you know, the value of skills and the value of skill set in goal setting and in, you know, making, you know, taking yourself to a whole new level.